from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, members of both chambers plan to work through the weekend, but that has one senator calling foul, suing the Senate president over the Sunday meeting. In the House, delegates debate a bill to repeal the Common Core-based education standards and assessments, and we discuss several pieces of legislation floating around the statehouse that could impact the rights of natural gas owners in West Virginia. Those stories coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. A member of the West Virginia Senate is suing the chamber's president over Sunday meetings. Democratic Senator John Unger of Berkeley County says Senate President Bill Cole is forcing him to choose between his religious practices as a minister and his position representing the people of his district. That, Unger says, is infringing on his religious freedom. Cole, on the other hand, says Unger's lawsuit is an act of political gamesmanship.
Senator John Unger filed the lawsuit in Kanawha County Circuit Court Thursday after Senate leadership announced the chamber would work both Saturday and Sunday this week. Unger is a minister at three churches in the Eastern Panhandle and says he is now being forced to choose between his religious and political work.
What has happened, it hasn't happened the 17 years I've been here where that's been in conflict, where I had to choose my faith over, or my worship practices and faith over my duties as a legislator.
Unger is personally blaming Senate President Bill Cole for the decision, saying Cole is attempting to block him from voting on legislation. Unger says every vote is important, but there is one major bill that could be on the calendar for Sunday, the West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The bill sets a judicial test for when a person believes the state government is infringing on his or her religious beliefs.
As an ordained minister, I'm not going to have an opportunity to discuss it or even vote on it. And so it's those types of game playing that Bill Cole is doing here that I just think is outrageous.
Unger says in the past, the Senate has laid bills over to allow senators who are absent to vote on the provisions. A vote on the concealed carry bill in the Senate was scheduled for Saturday last week, but Cole held the vote until Monday because Minority Leader Jeff Kessler could not attend the weekend session. Still, the West Virginia Constitution calls for a 60-day legislative session and does not exclude Sundays. Of the lawsuit, Cole said in a written statement Wednesday, quote, "I am extremely disappointed by what is clearly a sad attempt at political gamesmanship and obstructionism. Today's attention-seeking publicity stunt by Senator Unger is embarrassing, not only for him personally, but for this body as a whole. It shows how little respect Senator Unger truly has for the institution of the West Virginia Senate. We are certainly willing to accommodate Senator Unger's religious freedom by providing him with a leave of absence for any Sunday that he feels he cannot, in good faith, participate in the proceedings of the Senate. It is not a reasonable accommodation to force the entire legislature to shut down for the interests of one member," end quote. Unger says the Senate president's claims of political gamesmanship are false. He says for him, it's an issue of keeping the Sabbath holy. The hearing in the senator's case is scheduled for 11 a.m. Friday, the same time as the Senate's floor session. Unger says he has not yet decided if he will attend the hearing or be on the floor.
Yesterday, members of the Senate killed a bill that would have recalculated the state school aid funding formula and essentially cut $15 million in public school funding to balance the 2017 budget. The proposal was backed by Governor Tomlin, who issued a statement today on the bill. Tomlin said, quote, "Under the current law, Wealthy counties experiencing growth are able to put local revenues into a special account to support future school construction and maintenance needs. The money they save for those projects is replaced by money from the school aid formula on a dollar-for-dollar match. In essence, it means counties struggling with declining student enrollment and funding are subsidizing wealthy, growing counties. Senate Bill 452 would have reduced this inequitable appropriation and redirected funds from the state school aid formula to better meet the needs of all school systems. Tomlin expressed concerns over other budget proposals as well today, including a bill approved by the Senate this week that would raise the state's cigarette tax from 55 cents to $1.55 per pack. Tomlin had initially proposed a 45-cent increase. Of the bill, Tomlin said, quote, "While I don't rule out an increase of $1, we must consider the potential for adverse impacts on border retailers. Causing West Virginians to travel out of the state to purchase cigarettes means they may also buy groceries, gasoline, and other everyday products during those trips, reducing sales tax collections and potentially hurting small businesses." Delegates did approve one of Tomlin's fiscal proposals today that works to balance the budget while also offering some relief to the coal, natural gas, and timber industries. Senate Bill 419 defers payments from the state's workers' compensation debt fund back into the general revenue budget. Those payments are made with an additional severance tax on natural resources. With the passage of this bill and a signature from the governor, those additional taxes will expire this summer. Members of the House also debated amendments to a bill today that would repeal the state's Common Core-based education standards and require new assessments for the public education system. Common Core was repealed by the West Virginia Board of Education in December, but as Liz McCormick reports, some delegates believe the state board still hasn't gone far enough.
When the West Virginia Board of Education repealed the state's Common Core-based education standards in December, they replaced them with the West Virginia College and Career Ready standards. Those were the result of an 8-month review process led by State Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Michael Martirano. Still, some members of the House believe Martirano's standards are too similar to Common Core, and they want them removed. That's what House Bill 4014 would do. As approved by the House Education Committee, the bill would repeal any education standards based on Common Core and also prohibit the state from allowing students to take standardized tests aligned with those standards. Delegate Mike Folk of Berkeley County has been an outspoken opponent of Common Core. He was not satisfied with the committee's version of the bill and attempted to amend it on the floor Thursday. His amendment does three things. It replaces the state's math standards with those established by California in 1997. It replaces the West Virginia English Language Arts standards with standards written pre-Common Core in Massachusetts, and also creates a board of teachers from all 55 counties to write the assessments for these standards.
That's the essence of the amendment. Puts the teachers in control of the test.
Many members spoke against Folk's amendment, including members of his own party, like Delegate Roy Cooper of Summers County.
What we have before us is a complete rewrite of what 25 people did in the Education Committee. The Education Committee, as you know, like any other committee in this House, is formed for the purpose of channeling and funneling legislation. Ladies and gentlemen, we turned out a good piece of legislation up there, and this amendment, if we pass it, will stop what we did dead in its tracks.
Folk did find some supporters in the chamber, though, including Delegate Michael Ely of Jackson County.
If you're sick and tired of your child coming home crying because she can't do the new math, you'll vote for this amendment. And this has happened. I have had more than one constituent tell me that this has happened. We are at such a state in our educational system as a state. We are at such a position that the only way we have to go is up.
After nearly 2 hours of debate on the amendment alone, Folk closed the argument.
In closing, are we going to do what's best for the children? Are we going to do what's best? It's one tool in the toolbox, because there are other serious issues. The gentleman from the 20th talked about it. We need to pay teachers better. That'll keep the good teachers longer, keep them in our area, keep them from leaving.
His amendment failed on a vote of 35 to 62. His amendment was just one of 12 the body considered Wednesday. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Delegates did accept some amendments to the Common Core repeal bill today. One would require the Senate President and House Speaker to appoint a standards review panel to evaluate the current education standards in West Virginia. The bill will be up for a final vote in the House tomorrow. Liz McCormick also reports tonight on a bill giving nurse practitioners the authority to prescribe medication. Nurses say the bill that's making its way through the House will expand access to care in West Virginia. But some doctors argue the bill does not include enough oversight.
House Bill 3434 clarifies the requirements for a license to practice as an advanced practice registered nurse, or nurse practitioner, and expands the profession's prescriptive authority in West Virginia. Supporters of the bill say it will help rural areas that may not have ready access to a physician. Delegate Denise Campbell is a Democrat from Randolph County. She's one of the sponsors of the bill and is a practicing nurse.
Nurse practitioners work with the whole healthcare team in a collaboration, and that's what they're used to doing. And they will still continue to work with pharmacy, physicians, pharmacists, physical therapists. But what it is, it just allows them to have the ability to work within their training and their education.
The legislation has bipartisan support in the House, but outside the chamber, members of the medical community have expressed concerns over the bill. Penny Fioravante is the executive director of the West Virginia Osteopathic Medical Association. She says one of the major concerns is that nurse practitioners do not receive the same level of training as doctors, yet it gives them similar authority.
Physicians go to school, do their residencies. The process is about 12 to 16,000 patient care hours versus what an APRN is required to get, which is only 200 to 500 hours. That's a vast difference.
She also argues rural areas do have access to quality care, and the bill gives nurse practitioners more authority without oversight of a physician.
We urge our physicians, and we have incentive programs for the physicians to go and practice in these rural areas. And, you know, nurses can go and practice in those rural areas now. They just need to have that collaborative agreement with the physician so that everything is on the up and up and everything is part of the team effort.
Delegates are expected to put the bill to a final vote Friday. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
In the Senate today, members approved a bill that would require official state business be conducted in English. Supporters of the legislation explain the bill is only an endorsement of the language a majority of West Virginians speak, while those opposed to the measure say it could deter foreign businesses from locating in West Virginia. The measure heads to Governor Tomlin's desk for a signature. And the bill to allow ride-hailing services like Uber and Lyft to operate in West Virginia has made it over its first hurdle in the Senate. The Senate Judiciary Committee approved the bill this evening. It now heads to the full chamber for its consideration. Now we'll look at a few more members of the 82nd legislature in this edition of Meet Your Lawmaker.
Roman Prezioso represents the state's 13th senatorial district from Marion County. A Democrat, Prezioso was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 1996. He previously served as a member of the House of Delegates. Senator Prezioso is a former chair of the Senate Finance Committee. Peggy Donaldson Smith is a Democrat from Lewis County. She represents the state's 46th House of Delegates district and was elected in 2008. Donaldson Smith serves as the Assistant Minority Whip. She also serves as the Minority Chair of the Homeland Security and Minority Vice Chair of the House Government Organization Committee. Danny Wagner was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. A Republican, he represents the 47th House District. Delegate Wagner is from Barber County.
Lawmakers have spent the past two sessions writing and rewriting legislation that would allow for forced pooling or lease unitization in the natural gas industry in the state. As we near the end of this legislative session, there are at least four bills pertaining to the practice still being considered by lawmakers, none of which have made their way to the floor of either chamber just yet. Here tonight with an update on the legislation is Tom Huber. He's the vice president of the West Virginia Royalty Owners Association. Tom, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
I want to say quickly that we did invite Delegate Ireland to be with us tonight. He's the chair of the House Energy Committee, but the House is still on the floor right now debating a bill, so he couldn't join us this evening. But let's start with that negotiated version of the bill that we talked about earlier this session, 4426. Now we're saying that that bill's not going anywhere. What's going on?
I mean, we haven't given up hope, all right? But we have hope at this point. It's faced a lot of hurdles in the House. There's people that are concerned that any kind of force pulling shouldn't be passed. They feel very strongly about that. There are people that are against the model that uses an oil and gas commission, a government commission. They feel that that's an inappropriate avenue to take care of these issues. But we're still working hard to try to convince people and to try to show people that this approach balances the rights of property owners, surface and mineral owners, with the needs of the gas industry, because we all want the gas industry to succeed, to drill wells, to pay severance taxes, to employ our people. So we feel that that is the best bill that strikes the best balance between the two.
Well, let's take a step back a little bit and remind us just briefly, give us an overview of what this bill does.
Okay, so what 4426 does is it reforms the current deep well statute that allows for force pooling below the Onondaga limestone, but it adds numerous protections. It adds a farmer and a royalty owner members to the commission. It bans deductions from anyone who's forced in. On old leases, it requires that payment be made for unitization and that the terms can be no less favorable. It provides an opportunity for surface owners to obtain the interest in the oil and gas of the lost and unaccounted for owners. And it also provides multiple options of payment and compensation for the royalty owner that's forced in, including being a participating operator, which is a pretty amazing deal.
And when we say forced in, you mean there's the natural gas company kind of sets out this tract of land, they try to find the mineral owners and get them to sell, and if so many don't sell, this is a way to kind of get them to do it so that the state can pull that gas out of the ground. Excuse me, not the state, the industry can pull the gas out of the ground.
That's what we're talking about here. They call them non-consenting owners. They may want to develop their minerals, but maybe they couldn't come to an agreement with the oil and gas company. I mean, this is not uncommon. So in that situation, up to 20% of the net acreage of the unit could be brought before the commission under the 4426. And basically, the commission would hear evidence from both sides and decide what would be just and reasonable in a market environment as far as terms. We feel that that gives everybody their day to kind of make their arguments, and then you have an impartial body make those decisions.
And this is a House bill, and so like we said, some members of the House weren't comfortable with that version. So on Saturday, the House Energy Committee passed another bill, a brand new bill that's not exactly the same. Can you explain to us that legislation?
Yeah, so this is House Bill 4639. They call it a co-tenancy statute. I call it a forced leasing statute, because essentially what it does, and there's no commissions, there's no hearings, there's no courts, nothing. Once the gas company leases in a tract of minerals where there's multiple owners, once they've leased a simple majority, they then can develop the tract. And there's different interpretations of what the act does as far as who pays the non-consenting owners and what they get and how they get it, and how the accounting's made. It was a hastily constructed bill. It was run through very quickly through Energy on a Saturday morning where there were a lot of members absent. Our group has serious issues with it because we feel that anything that hurts the negotiating power of a mineral owner and doesn't somehow provide protections as well is unfair and it's unreasonable. And in this case, where you could have 49% of the owners in a tract left out of the negotiating process altogether, we feel that's inappropriate.
So you represent the royalty owners. Is there anything in this bill that protects the surface owners?
No. It strictly deals with the leasing process. We're not talking pooling and unitization, so we're not even really addressing what was the stated concern, which is these holdout owners are holding up the whole unit for all of these people because they say no. In this instance, we're talking tract by tract. So it's kind of disingenuous to say this fixes the problem or even really addresses the core of the problem. So that's another reason that I and our organization is kind of suspect of this bill. And we'd really encourage a return to the stakeholders process.
So we've talked about royalty owners, we've talked about surface owners, but that's still only a small portion of West Virginians. Why should all West Virginians as a whole care about what happens with these pooling bills?
Okay, so if you're just an average West Virginian, maybe living in the city of Morgantown or Clarksburg, and you don't live out in the country on a farm or you don't have mineral rights, these things still affect you because those farmers, those mineral owners, they pay property taxes on their property, they pay income taxes on the money they receive for leasing, on the money they receive for royalties, and then they spend that money. You know, so all of this affects our economic well-being in the state. A lot of these people that it does affect live in your communities, in your counties. So if you devalue their property, if they get significantly less money because they're disadvantaged in negotiations, that's going to hurt your tax base. That's going to hurt your local economies. The argument against that is, well, the gas companies would pay more severance tax. They'd drill more. But the drilling activity is more regulated by supply and demand. Right now, there's a glut of gas in this country. There's a glut of gas in this region. The price is extremely low. You don't see a lot of drilling happening because of that. When the price is higher, there's a lot of drilling. You can go out to Marshall, Wetzel, Harrison, Doddridge County, and they'll let you know there's been some drilling. So,
well, Tom Huber with the West Virginia Royalty Owners Association, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
There are 134 members of the West Virginia legislature between the House and the Senate, but the number of staff supporting those members is far larger. Tonight, we meet the clerk of the House, who explains his job at the State House.
My name is Steve Harrison. I'm the clerk of the House of Delegates. I'm a native of Kanawha County, grew up in Sissonville, graduated from Sissonville High School in 1985, was recruited to play football at Brown University, went to Brown, graduated in 1990 with a triple concentration of economics, political science, and organizational behavior and management. Came back here, went to work in the banking industry, and worked in banking for a total of 24 years plus before I became clerk of the House. But early in my years in banking, I ran for the House of Delegates, got elected at the age of 26, served five terms in the House, and got elected to the Senate in 2002, served a term in the Senate and decided not to run for re-election. And then when the majority changed after the last election, the incoming speaker, Delegate Armstead, he asked me if I'd be interested in becoming clerk of the House. And in December, I was nominated by the Republican caucus and then elected in January as the 23rd clerk of the House. The clerk is, I guess, really the primary administrator for the House of Delegates. We have five employees in the clerk's office, in addition to myself, in the legislative portion of the clerk's office. We have an assistant clerk and parliamentarian. We have a journal clerk. We have a bill status clerk. We have a documents clerk. And we also have an administrative assistant. And when you watch the session and you see the front desk, we're up there processing the bills. One of the things I found in my first year as clerk is how busy it is out of session. I knew session would be busy, and session's very unpredictable. You don't know how long you're going to be here. Some evenings are very long. The hours are more predictable in the off season, but still very busy with the paperwork and other things that need done to wrap up the previous session and get ready for the next session. I love going out and taking people into the chamber. And we do mock sessions occasionally, and usually when I get a student group, I'll take them up to the speaker's podium, let them ring the call bell, let them ring the voting gong, and just try to encourage them to be interested in the process. And I'll say to them, you know, maybe one of these days some of you will be sitting in here.
As we mentioned earlier in the show, tomorrow, a Kanawha County Circuit judge will hear arguments in a lawsuit filed by a state senator against the Senate president. Berkeley County Democrat John Unger says holding Sunday sessions is infringing on his religious freedom. Unger is a pastor who leads three churches in the Eastern Panhandle. Tomorrow evening, we'll bring you a special report from that hearing. Join us at 6:30 and 11:30. This has been The Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.